You're listening to Between the Reads, a bi-weekly podcast that shines a spotlight on books by new and recently published authors. I'm your host, Audra Russell. Are you looking for a good read? Tired of being disappointed by trending books that don't live up to the hype? Maybe you're an aspiring author and feel like giving up on your writing? Stay tuned, book lovers and writers alike. This show is for you. Author Janae Thompson writes realistic young adult and new adult novels that capture the unique experiences of young Black men and women, taking it day by day through their own personal struggles. While many popular novels for this target audience focus on racial tension and navigating racial oppression through a youthful perspective, Janae intentionally creates masterpieces that desensationalize racial trauma and focus solely on characters' individuality amid their Blackness. She believes that we are more than our oppression and that we shouldn't have to read about what rears its ugly head every day. Janae grew up in southeastern Wisconsin and is a K-8 educator. She holds a bachelor's degree in elementary education with minors in English and creative writing. She also has a master's degree in K-12 educational leadership and policy analysis. She has won several career and community awards and is a People Program Scholar. She is also a staunch advocate for children's success, racial equality, and anything and everything Black. She is married and loves shopping, singing, playing basketball, and of course, writing. Janae.
Hello.
Welcome to the lair.
I'm in trouble.
Yeah. Are in so much trouble, man. Yes, you are.
Lordy, lordy, lord.
So let's just get right on into this powerful, masterfully written, heartbreakingly told, page-turning, frustrating, all the feelings debut novel, Looking Beyond the Ordinary.
Yes, yes.
So let's explain how you came up with this novel.
Okay, so this is actually, I started writing this book when I was 13 years old. So like I was already in middle school, eighth grade, about to go to high school. And I was like, dude, I'm tired of reading about racism in my books. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm ready. I want to write something that people my age and people like me want to read. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote the very, very first version in 2006.
Okay.
And I wanted to create like a situation that I was kind of going through at the time where, because D-Block, okay, so D-Block is like, the block, the senior block, that everybody just be tripping. Like, you know, they just bullies. They just turn up on everybody. And we had something like that in my middle school, not to the same extent, but it was something similar. Mm-hmm. So I actually recreated D-Block based on something that had already existed in my middle school experience. And so I wrote that out, and then 13 years later, 13 years passes, and I never released it. I never told anybody that I wrote this book. I wrote it on like a, this is a fun fact, this book was actually fan fiction at first.
Okay.
And so 13 years passes, and then I go and look at my old writing, and then I come across this. And I was like, ooh, this is actually a gem. This is actually a real gem. Like, okay, 13-year-old me. So I rewrote it. I revamped it because, you know, 13-year-old grammar ain't hitting.
Uh-huh.
So I rewrote it and I changed some scenes, added some scenes in there, made it a little bit more dynamic, developed the characters a little more, and then voila, there it is. Mm-hmm. There it is.
So what you're saying is you put everybody else through all this stress because of some trauma your ass went through in school.
Pretty much.
And you had to go and let everybody else experience all this madness. That's what you're trying to tell us right now?
Mm-hmm. Y'all, because you know what? 13-year-old me was the bystander. 13-year-old me wasn't the Jade or the Drell. 13-year-old me was like sitting back laughing at everything and everybody. Mm-hmm. Laughing at, you know, a person like Drell's expense, and hating people like Jade. So, I was just like on the outside, just, you know.
So you was co-signing on everything.
Yeah, exactly. I was horrible. I was a little bystander.
And yet so you still did everything. You see, okay. We get ready to get up. Okay. I see how you do. You was a co-signer, and you couldn't even avenge yourself and let nope. Jarrell have some peace. You had to just think. Okay, we're going to get into it. So let's talk about Jade first and her trifling ass mama, yes. Janet, who's straight trash. Okay, just throw her away. There's no redeeming quality. The whole woman away. Just throw it away. So talk to us about. Let's start with Janet's ass because I can't. Go Woo. Ahead. Explain yourself.
Woo. Okay, so Janet. She got her. She got her little motives, but yeah. like. Jade, I created Janet as a character that Jade needed motivation from for like the reason why she act the way she do. Mm-hmm. And I was like, how can I create an over the top little character that gives mm-hmm. Jade a reason mm-hmm. why she acts the way she do, but also not quite as, you know, mm-hmm. what's the word for her? What word would you use to describe her? Not Janet? Quite as, yes.
Trifling ass.
Not Stank. Quite as trifling. Because Jade Stank. Trifling. Yup, exactly. Stank. Jade is all of those things, but not to the extent of her mama. Mm. Like she got a heart. But you know, Jade was raised by her, and it took, you know, Jarrell and other circumstances to realize that, okay, maybe my mama not really like the model mom I thought she was, you know.
Mm. Elitist. So, condescending.
Yes.
Just classes.
Yes. You know what? This is an unpopular opinion though, and you probably go kill me after I get off this live with you. You know what? I like her because she brings the drama. I actually really like the mom because she brings all the turmoil. And that's why I like her. Not because of her personality, but because of, you know, oh, the drama she brings, you know.
Yeah. You see, I'm being silent right now.
You and a lot of other people.
Serious side eye and duck lips I'm giving you right now. If this was a video interview, your ass would be done. Ooh. Okay? Oh. I don't like nothing about her. Throwing shoes at people.
She's so trash, though. She is.
She is straight thrower away. No redeeming quality.
She's awful.
She is not even human.
Yep.
And she made her little mistake and messed up her life, but she got Jade out of it. But then she tried to turn Jade into the monster that, you know, she is.
Exactly.
Because she's trying to keep that girl from making her mistakes and don't realize she probably pushing that child right into the same damn things that she did. Right. Just by being so damn mean.
Yep. Sure is. Mm-hmm. Really, she really bullied Jade. She's very controlling. Yeah. Like, she don't let Jade do nothing. If it ain't nothing that she want her to do, she don't want her to do it. Like, forget mm-hmm. it. If you ain't dating so-and-so, then I'm just finna go mess it up. Or I'm just gonna do this. She tried.
And going up in the stands and telling that girl's friend
yep.
that they need to date.
Yep, doing the most.
And May Janae dropped that girl
yep.
in the middle of the halftime show.
Yep.
And break her leg.
Yep.
Watching her crazy ass mama. See, this is what I'm talking about. That's why I don't like you right now, Janae. I can't. Okay, we're gonna go to Jade now. Jade, when the book opened, I was like, you know what? I don't even want to read this book because this is trash. She got these folks up in here bullying people. My daughter was bullied in middle school. I had to take her out and homeschool yep. her. So, you know, yep. I'm just like, I'm not dealing with the bully thing. Yep. This book better get good. Mm-hmm. Why did I ask for the book to get good?
See, you be careful what you wish for.
I'm just saying, Jay started off like I'm mm-hmm. side-eyeing. She was a little bully, and
yeah.
but then you went and made her actually likable. Like, mm-hmm. you redeemed Jade. So talk uh-huh. to us about Jade.
Yeah, so Jade, I love me some Jade. I couldn't stand her at first. Because like I said, mm-hmm. like, you know, I was in middle school. Like, I wasn't like the bully kid. I was in elementary school. But like, I had a fresh start mm-hmm. in middle school. So I came from like the bully kid to like mm-hmm. the bystander. So I was like, I ain't getting bullied no more, so I can laugh. But mm-hmm. at the same time, I still hated people like Jay, who acted like they shit don't stink, just walking mm-hmm. around thinking they just all of that in a bag of chips and mm-hmm. really ain't shit. And, you know, so I was like, let me create a character like that. Mm-hmm. But also thinking about character development, I'm like, she got to grow in some way. Like, mm-hmm. she can't just remain this little, she can't be her mama. I don't mm-hmm. want her to be her mama. So... Right. You know, I couldn't stand her. Like, you know, when I was writing it, I get into my feelings when I create characters. I cry, I laugh.
Obviously, the hell. Like,
yes, I get into, like, it's like, I'm not me. I'm like them, but I'm also me at the same time. And I'm like, oh, I can't stand her. Mm-hmm. And then, like, you know, after a while, like, you know, after she encounters Jarell and, you know, she gets humbled by all of this shit that she, you know, Mike ain't messing with her like the way she want him to, you know, she dropping her teammate on the field and she's supposed to be the captain. There's a lot of situations that kind of humble her and she mm-hmm. like, oh, okay, I ain't, you know, quite the shit that I think I am, you know. So like, she grows.
But she kind of is, though. She kind of is, you know, with the dancing. I mean, who the absolutely. Hell dances for Chris Brown?
Right, nobody. Her.
Right?
Yes, okay, she is. Lead
dancer too. So on that aspect, you know, she's kind of the shit, and she could dance her ass off, and she's yep. making a little bank.
Yep.
You know, and but then there's this other side that she's,
yep, there's this other side of her, like, you know, like, because she thinks that she's supposed to be perfect, and she realizes through all of these things, like, okay, yeah, I got all of this going for myself, but I ain't perfect, like mm-hmm. the way my mama want me to be, and that's a lot of pressure for her too. You know, and I empathize with her because her mama's so damn crazy. Like, she is under an immense amount of pressure to be perfect, you know, and she's not. Mm-hmm. So that was the motivation behind that character.
Okay. And I come on here for explain D-Block because I know you. Yeah. Give us the rest.
D-Block. So. D-Block is a, that's actually a wing. So, you know, high schools have certain wings. Yep. Yep. Very trifling. Just
running the school and got even the principals and the teachers scared.
Scared. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. we'll run them off. Like I said, like, so the middle school I went to, we were just bad as shit. We were bad as hell. Like, we were banned from field trips. That's how bad we were. Wow. So, yeah, we were horrible. We were awful. And it was the same way. The teachers were scared. Like, they couldn't teach nothing. So, D-Block, like I said, was kind of spawned from my experiences in, like, eighth grade and, like, you know, going into high school. And they were comprised of just, like, the ladies who just big and bad and always fought. And then the boys who was all on the basketball team and... You know, they could talk about any and everybody, mm-hmm. but nobody really won fights because as soon as there was fights, at least two fights a day. And, you know, nobody really.
Where the hell
are you? I know, up, Southeastern girl? Wisconsin. People be like, there's black people there.
Okay, first of all, I had cousins in Madison. Ain't shit in Wisconsin, but University of Wisconsin is cheating. What the hell y'all doing?
I know. All right, I'm in Madison now. So, like, Madison ain't nothing like where I grew up. So, like, Racine, Wisconsin is where I grew up, which is right in, smack in the middle between Chicago and Milwaukee.
Oh, see that.
So, okay. Yep, exactly. So, we were awful. Mm-hmm. And D-Block kind of spawned from that, you know, where it's like, you know, nobody's really, well, there are ringleaders, but everybody's the ringleader because everybody done won some fights, lost some fights, and, you know, everybody just think they big and bad. Mm-hmm. And that's how that ended up because of my own experiences of what I saw. Mm-hmm. And like me, I wasn't a part of that block in middle school, but I also wasn't the one getting bullied either because mm-hmm. I played basketball. Mm-hmm. So I was with the boys outside of school. So they was like, "Oh, you cool? You're like, you ain't cool enough to be with us, but you ain't cool enough to be like getting thrown in the garbage cans." Mm-hmm. So So that's where that came from.
I think somebody needs to sit her ass down and write some apology letters to some of her old teachers. That's what I think. There's some teachers here out there somewhere who are probably like, oh, Janae. Oh, okay.
I know. And you want to know the crazy part about this all is I'm a teacher.
I know. Like this, you got some karma coming your way. I don't want to be in your classroom. Ooh, I'm just saying.
Trust me, when kids turn up in my classroom, I'll be having to think. I'll be like, oh, okay, I can't even really get mad because
karma. Karma's a bitch, and she's up in her classroom.
Show Liz.
She's sitting in the back with a cigarette in her mouth, like, see what I'm gonna do today.
Yeah, because I done had a few kids turn up on me. I'm like, oh.
Hey, let me take the ears off. Y'all don't know I'm the original D-Bot. Y'all ain't read my book? Let me tell you. Ain't going to be no cutting up in here. Not today.
Not today.
Wow. Okay, so everyone in this book has layers.
Oh, yeah.
Because Janet, trash that she is, even she has layers. She was probably at some point a nice little kid. She fell in love with the wrong guy, got pregnant at 17. Mm-hmm. Her parents, did I remember her parents kicked her out? Or they...
Yep, they sure did.
They kicked her out. So, you know, all of her issues stem from that. So then you got Jade. She's got her layers. You know, she's this pompous, arrogant... You know, I'm fly, and if you ain't on my level, you can't be with me, you can't deal with me.
Yep.
You know, but then under that, you've got that her mama is the way she was, and her mother wouldn't let her, you know, said emotions were for the weak, and, you know, use your mind, use your money, you know, use your man type thing, and, you know, so there's layers to her, and there's even layers to the dummy's own D-block. You know, and then there's even layers to Jarrell. So, let's begin with Jarrell and everything did to my poor baby in this book.
My heart.
Yeah, your heart, nothing, because you wrote this shit. You didn't even let him get a break. Nowhere in here. Every time a little light at the end of the tunnel shone, it was a big-ass train that just mowed his ass over. So don't give me this crap about, oh, Jarrell's my favorite. Really?
He is. Really? He is.
Really?
He really is. No.
Go on, tell the readers what you did to Jarrell. Go ahead.
Where do I start?
Yeah, exactly. See, she did so much shit to this boy. She don't even know where to start. Go ahead. Let's start with the fact that you got dirty on and the raggedy shoes. And do we even want to reveal the one thing about him, about his eyes, or do we want to leave that for the readers?
We're going to leave that for the readers. We're going to leave that for the readers.
Go ahead. Just explain who Jarrell is and the shit you put him through. Go ahead.
Okay. So, Jarrell, my favorite character.
Bullshit.
Jarrell, he's a high school senior, and he is actually one of the most misunderstood bully kids in the school. So, he has a disability that no one knows about because he's like, I'm not telling nobody because he has his reasons as to why. And he's also living in poverty, which makes him a perfect target for D-Block anyway, to just completely torture. That combination between like his disability and the fact that he's living in poverty with a single parent who is working a minimum wage job kind of like sets him up like he is the grand target, other than, you know, people who like occasionally walk through the hallway when they're not supposed to be walking through it. So he's dealing with that. Like, so he's dealing with, you know, his mother and poverty and the bullies at school, but also the backstory of his life with the decisions his mom made. So like with his mom and like the situation that she was in with, she got into a relationship with someone who wasn't the best, and you'll actually find out more about that in part two.
Y'all, you actually get she underplayed wasn't yeah. the best.
Okay. Yeah, you get his whole life backstory in part two. But her decision making ultimately ruined her son. Like, you know, ruined his emotional, mental, physical being, everything. He is just like,
everything.
Just ruined his life. And he is just holding, like, he's like a walking barrel of trauma. Right. So like he's just harboring all of that, and he doesn't even want to create relationships with other people. So like when Jade came
in,
can you
blame him?
He's like,
look what you did.
I know.
Look what you did.
Exactly.
You have to treat him like that. You ain't have to treat him like that. You ain't have to do my baby like that.
Oh, Dre. I'm sorry.
No, you ain't. You sold him out. You sold him out for the book. Go ahead.
But you know, people gotta learn through them. So yeah, he's this walking barrel of trauma, and when Jay comes in his life, and you know, she's like, you know, I'm kind of curious, he actually kind of cute. And she like trying to get to know him, and he like, fuck that, fuck you and fuck everybody else, like I'm not fucking with
you. First of all, you gonna back this up, because it didn't even go down like that. You know good and the hell well she saw him and asked somebody who he was, and they clowned her for asking who he was.
Sure did. And so they sure did.
Yeah, go ahead and tell that part.
Oh yeah, so like, so when she was, you know, she got her little deal with at the dance studio. She got like a little gig of working as a youth choreographer. She's so excited. She texted Mike on the way home, and she damn near runs him over, like, you know, because he's walking across the street, and like she runs a red light, and she's like, oh shit, like, so she avoids hitting him, and like when she goes to apologize, she realizes she didn't know it was him at first. But then when she goes up to him to apologize, she realizes that it was him. And this is the first time that she's ever been like up close and personal with him. So she's like, oh, like, he's actually kind of handsome. Like, oh. And so she becomes a little curious. Like, and she know her friend. She kept him a secret. She like, I ain't gonna tell D Block about him. Like, the fuck? Right. I'm not gonna tell Murray either, who's her best friend. And so, like, she's been kind of keeping her friendship and her tenacity to get to know him under wraps. But then, you know, she couldn't keep that a secret for that long. Like, you know, because everybody's kind of watching her. She's under the spotlight. So that's how that happened. But when Jarrell wasn't going, he was like, I don't want to ride from you. Like, what is this?
Moving.
Like,
you trying to keep just... moving.
Exactly. And that's exactly how he
and they had already had a little confrontation because Mike had basically tried to beat him up, Mike and that other trifling
Martell bitch ass.
They messing with this boy, and by this time, you know what's going on with Jarrell. You know what his disability is. And so she tries to stop.
Right
thing, but she ain't really all
thorough
with it. So he's just like, look, you almost ran me over. It's cool. Just keep it moving. I don't need no ride from you.
Yep, that's exactly what he did. But she kept chipping away at him, and then she really started to like fuck with him when she realized that he also dances
very well.
Yep, he's a great
dancer. Her, actually.
Exactly. And she like, damn, I can't even keep up with him. Like, oh, maybe we, like, you cute and you dance. Like, maybe we should, like, for real, do this thing. Like, you should be a part of my studio. And he like, fuck that, I'm not being a part of no studio. That's not why I dance in the first place. Yeah, I'm good, but I dance for a whole different reason than you.
Right.
And I'm just not fucking with it. Leave me alone.
And the whole reason he dances is another reason, litany of reasons why I'm mad at your ass. Okay.
And I'm mad that I can't even expound on this because I need people who haven't read this book to go through all the emotional torture that I went through in this book.
I know. Trust me, you ain't the only one.
Yeah. Ooh, yes. But then there's this sweetness that happens between them because they do end up getting together. And when she, you know, it's funny because she realizes that she really didn't like Mike and Mike really wasn't feeling her because on their prom night, you know, he tried to force the sexual situation in the backseat of the car and was just like, look, this ain't no big deal. You know, it's just sex. And she was like, okay, well, just take me home. I don't want to do this.
Yep.
But then
and he got mad.
He got mad. Just dropped mad. Off. Almost didn't even stop the car. Just kind of like rolled to a slow and, you know, out you go. And so, you know, she ends up later on having a relationship with Jarrell and he ends up becoming her first. And this boy who has been through so much is worried about her and it being special and taking this time and not hurting her. And she realizes that in him, even under all of this trauma, he's this loving, sweet person who put her first and she sees what love is supposed to be.
Exactly. Exactly. And he learned that even through how his mom was treated. Mm-hmm. You know, he's like, knowing how my mom was treated, like, I don't want to put another woman through that. Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, so he is very mature. Like, he's seen a lot, been through a lot. So he is extremely mature for his age. Mm-hmm. And that's what Jade, like you said, that's what she becomes. That's what she realizes, like, damn, Mike didn't even ask me, like, how I would feel throughout any of this. And then, yeah, here Jarrell is, somebody who I've been calling a ghost this whole time, like, really deeply cares. Like, he has a whole, like, another side of him that he shows no one except me, you know? Mm-hmm. And that was, I think that was my favorite part. I think the romance of the book, like that was my absolute favorite part of the book, just their intimacy and how they grew together.
At least you gave him that.
So I did. See, I didn't. I ain't do him.
I said at least you gave him that. I didn't say don't get all happy and all. You still get him wrong. Okay, calm down. You ain't even gonna feel that magic up in this interview.
I tried it.
Didn't work. You gave them that moment.
I sure did.
And then took it all away.
I know. Because
why you have to make that boy go drown in the pool? Why you do that?
Because that's
and then her on top of it. Why you do that?
You know, just to like, you know, I don't even know.
You just kept piling shit on this poor boy, like one thing after the other. I was like, Jarrell, just don't even. That's why that boy was so, you know, uptight, because he knew your ass was going to write something else every time.
He knew. But you know what? Jarrell stopped taking that shit. He was like, look.
Yep.
Like, I'm just fuck all y'all up. Like, you know, every last one of you, I really could. I could have been did it if I wanted to, but like. What's the point for him? He's like, what's the point of doing that? Because somebody else gonna come the next day and do the same shit to me, like, you know. But you
I'd have just been fucking everybody up, like, okay,
right.
we go, I'll just beat this whole school's ass, then y'all leave me alone.
And that's what he ended up basically saying. Like, all you got, just stop fucking me for the rest of school year before you end up like this nigga on the floor, you know? So. Yep. Yeah, he got to that point. Like, all right, it's been 4 years. I can't do this no more. Like, I'm ready to explode. Like, my head is ready to explode.
Yep.
You know?
And like I said, you still ain't answer why you pushed him in the pool.
Oh, yeah, the pool part. I mean, I didn't have to do it, but, like, I think
you're
for me,
it
was...
is what it is. You a sadistic.
You said what?
You sadistic. That's what it is.
Nah, I could have done way worse, but I think for that moment, I think especially with Jay going in to help him, for her, it was a moment of like, I will do anything, anything to protect him, mm-hmm. you know, and really showing that growth for her. Like, cause she could have been like, lifeguard. It could have just stood there, but she like, all right, like, this is it. You know, this is, I made this decision to care about him. I made this promise to be there for him. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, I actually meant that, you know, and I think that particular scene mm-hmm. in that particular moment was to show that Jade was real, like was serious about her promise to him, mm-hmm. you know? So I had to push him in the pool, you know, but I think that moment really showed what Jade was really feeling for him.
And then you know? You couldn't even let that moment be a moment because nope. then in the hospital, that's
you know, the mama got to show up.
Janice trashy ass come up in there. Talking about Jarrell's mom wouldn't shake the woman's hand, called them some trash and ghetto and whatever the hell else she called. Then started throwing stuff at yep. Jarrell, and we know why. Mm-hmm. And we ain't gonna say, but she was throwing shoes and throwing pencils and whatever the hell
else she had
in her purse at yep. the boy who was sitting there traumatized. That is when you broke me. That's when I cried for real.
Yep.
I'm mad at you.
I'm sorry.
You ain't. No, you ain't. Because when we talked in DM, you were like, I'm sorry, but wait, am I? I was like, oh. Okay, I see how you do. I see how you wrote.
Maybe I did mean to make you cry.
Uh-huh. Why? You didn't have to, again, the boy almost drowned. Jade almost drowned trying to save him because they were both in swimming class. They were learning how to swim. Why couldn't you just let them have that moment? Why'd you have to bring Janet back up in there starting stuff?
Because, you know, you got to, it's like a climax. You got to build it up, you know, and Janet, Janet wasn't going nowhere. And she in the hospital? You know she was going to come in and on some other shit. Like, you know, she was like, my daughter, she was dropping in the water for who? So, she had to come up in the, she had to come up in the mix and be like, excuse me, who are you?
Yeah.
And she knew who he was because she met him at the concert, you know? Mm-hmm. So, she like, oh, I done told this motherfucker. My daughter, mm-hmm. and she can't talk to him no more. And like, you know, I caught his clothes in my laundry, and I told your ass you can't talk to him. So also, now you're finna really get it, mm-hmm. you know. So mom is just like, she already at her wit's end with Jay because she like, I told you not to be walking around with him, and now your ass and damn near died messing around with him. So now, like, I'm just finna turn up, you know.
Yeah. And so, you know, peer pressure is traumatizing, and every character in your book responds to it differently. Mm-hmm. And everyone has their threshold of tolerance and a breaking point.
Yep.
So this was kind of her, Janice, breaking point, though. I don't give no shit about her. They could just carry her off and literally never see her again. I don't even want to see her in the series. I don't want to see her in the second book. I don't want to see her in the third book unless you got her ass out on a corner somewhere doing tricks or something like that, because I need some karma to happen to her. Okay? But back to my point. So the breaking point, this was the breaking point for Jarrell. Like I said, this is where I cried because he was like, why does everybody hate me? Why do I have to keep going through all this? And this is when he tells his mom, I need you to apologize for your choices because uh-huh. your choices are why I am going through everything that I'm going through.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his breaking point. And I, you know, just talk a why was it important for you to show that, you know, there is a limit that the people do break?
Yeah, because I think people just pick and pick and pick and don't realize that, like, they may be getting it from other places too.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And this is just everybody. This is like, now, right now, what we're talking about is like the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, because Jarrell's getting it from school. He's getting it from his home life. Now he's getting it from Jade's mom. Mm-hmm. And none of them really know that each other is doing that to him. Mm-hmm. And so they think it's just them. Like, I just don't like him because I'm just, you know, I'm me and I don't see nobody else. I'm just not messing with Jarrell. But they don't realize that he's getting it from so many other places.
Everywhere.
You know what I mean? Everywhere. Mm-hmm. And that's the lesson to be learned. When you are constantly attacking someone, picking, just because it like pleases you or whatever.
Or takes really the attention off of you, because that's really what people are talking about. Is that you are so insecure, you want to pick on somebody else so people are looking at them and not you.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. And not even realizing, not even thinking twice about where somebody else could be getting that from. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so that's, like I said, that's the lesson to be learned in all of this. It's like, when you do that, like, you don't know people's situation. You don't know their stories. You don't know what they've been through. And like, when you do that, they do have a breaking point, to the point where he might just fuck your ass up like he did Martell and, you know, Marcus. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like, start yelling at his mom. Or, you know, people have a limit. So you really have to like watch it, and you really have to be mindful of how you're treating people, because you really don't know what people go through and what their stories are. Mm-hmm. And so that's really why I put Jarrell through all of that, because, you know, it's just, it's for bigger picture. No. You know what I'm saying? He is my favorite, you know. But no, yeah, that really is like, you know, the
stink eye picture. Again, I'm giving you stink eye. I'm not. Because then on top of that, he was like, I'm done. He said, I don't want to live. I don't want to be around anymore. This is just too much. You know, everybody, he was like, the one person that loves me, that's there for me, is Jade. And now her mother is even, you know, and now I've got to deal with her. You know, I can't even just have this thing, this one person, because there's somebody there that's trying to destroy that. You know, and he was like, I'm done. I don't want it. And the only way, no one could stop him from walking out of that room. And I truly think that if Jade hadn't called the nurse in and said, I need him on suicide watch, I think he probably, because yo ass would have wrote it down so that he committed suicide. Because that's how you do people. That's how you do people. So I was like, if this bitch writes that this boy goes out here and kills himself, I'm going to go to wherever Janae is. And on her door, and we going to fight for real.
I could never kill him off. I couldn't do it. I can't do it.
Girl, for a second, when he was just like, I'm done, I was like, I was actually screaming like, somebody needs to do something. Don't let this boy walk out the door, because if you do, that's it. It's over.
Yep, that's it. And Jay knew that. His mama knew it too. That's why she was pulling him. She tore his favorite hoodie up. Like, she's like, I will do anything, you know. And like, the mom is flawed too, Jarrell's mom. Like, you know, she should apologize a long time ago.
Long time ago. Yep.
But she should apologize. She shouldn't, but you know, that's also pride. You know, if you think about parents.
Beating her ass all the time. She was too scared to do anything. I'd have been scared too. Yep. Actually, no, because I'd have gotten a cast iron pan and knocked his ass out.
Right?
Okay, that just, when I see stuff like that, I'm like, she obviously ain't got no brothers, no father around, because hiding it from them, because ain't no way if a woman's father or brother knows that their sister or daughter is being abused, they ain't gonna come in.
Right, and they ain't going for that.
Yeah, hell to the no. But but then you even let it go there, you see? Because she took him out while he was on suicide watch, got permission to take him to the park so they could do their little dance. Because the two of them had this vibe. And when they would dance, it was like a sensual thing. And they just vibed off of each other.
Yes, yes.
So they went to the park to go do their thing. And he was smiling. And she was with him. And it was about to be a romantic situation. And then what did you do? Tell them what you did, because I ain't gonna say it. What'd you do? Why? What? What'd you do?
Do you put them in the back of the SUV?
They didn't just put their asses in the back of the SUV. They had guns.
Yep, they sure did. Pointed it at them. They was like, if you try to run, basically might as well write your own obituary. Mm-hmm. You might as well just get in the car. Not even they didn't do all that. They threatened him and they threw him in the trunk. They threw him in the trunk and was like, basically, if you try to look up out this SUV, I swear to God, I'm gonna just blast you. I'm gonna just blast you to nothing. Mm-hmm. And so they like Jade and Jarrell are like, what the fuck? And like, mm-hmm. they just don't know. They don't know where they're going. They don't know what's going on. And. Mm-hmm. That's how it is right now.
What happens after that, Janae?
Oh yeah, the book ends.
Uh huh. See, readers, this is the kind of shit I'm talking about. It's a great book. Don't get me wrong. You gonna stay up probably all night reading it. You gonna be turning pages. You gonna be going happy face, sad face, shock face. You know all the emojis. You gonna use up all the emojis if you try to write about this. On Instagram, mm-hmm. you just gotta go through all the emotions.
Yep.
But then she takes you right to that cliff called suspense.
Yep.
And pushes your ass over and says, "The end."
Yep.
Really?
The end.
Really?
Gotta have it like that. Gotta set it up for part two. You know what I'm saying?
See that little laugh right there? That's why I said you sadistic. That little. That's exactly what I'm talking about. You ain't have to see Jarrell like that at the end. You didn't have to do that. Hadn't he been through enough?
Mm-hmm. See, the thing is, you don't even know who did it. We don't know. We don't know who took him away.
Yeah, you could have at least done that. You could have at least let it be known who was. See, there it is again, that little laugh.
No, I gotta save all the good stuff. Gotta save all the good stuff for part two.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I need the copy ahead of time to read. I'll be a proofreader. I'm not waiting for no arc.
You don't want to wait for an arc?
I don't want no. I'm not waiting for no arc. I want the rough draft. I proofread. I need to know what happens.
Yeah. We might be able to make some arrangements there.
Mm-hmm. That's what you be playing around. When I show up in Wisconsin, you in Madison, too, I got to get them. That's okay. Keep playing around. That's okay. We're going to move to the writing side of the show now because I'm done with you. I'm done. We're going to go to the writing side now. And don't let these compliments go to your head because you're still in trouble.
No.
I love the way that you humanize Black people. You show that Black kids are normal kids with all the same pressures and problems and lives as white people.
Yep.
You know, when we're often dehumanized and we're looked at as less than, and, you know, or it's like you said, it's always, everything is always under the veil of oppression and racism.
Oh, yeah.
And instead of just showing that, yeah, we deal with that too, but we still have regular lives and it's not always about the racism.
Exactly. So
why did you choose to focus, to make this the focus of your writing?
You know, because we are especially YA right now is so saturated with police brutality, mass incarceration, trying to feel like, why can't they accept me because I'm Black? Like, no. No.
They ain't never gonna accept you. So let's stop making it cry.
Yeah, it's like, let's just live, because literally we have our own lives that we live and we go through different things that like everybody else go through that like needs to be talked about and needs to be talked and highlighted, because like, yes, we experience the same things as white people, but we experience them in different ways, as you can see in this book. You know what I mean? Like, a white person to pick this book up, like, oh, the language, or like, you know, they're, it's not for white people, you know, it's for Black teenagers and, you know, Black readers who love YA, you know? Mm-hmm. So for me, that's like my niche. Like, let's start creating stories and books that ain't got nothing to do with the next person being shot by the police.
Right.
Or the next person who is crying and sad and out and about because they don't feel accepted at school because they Black. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's none of that in this book. Like, actually, everybody Black, you know, in the book.
Right. Right. Like, there are... except Lori, right? I think
she... Yeah, yep. And she not even thinking about who Black and who not.
Right,
you know?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So with this, and this goes back to my experience, that's what I experienced, you know, in middle school, like when I first wrote this book, eighth grade, we were all Black, you know, like we, that's what it was. We weren't thinking about racism, who got jacked up by the police or what have you, or what racist teacher said what to so-and-so. Like, we were just bad as hell and was having fun doing it, you know? And that's really what that's the surface of this book. Of course, like, badass kids just, you know, wreaking havoc and having fun doing it.
Right.
But of course, there's lessons to be learned from it, you know? So that's why I made it the focus, is that, you know, not everybody wants to read about, you know, white folks and what they doing to Black folks, especially kids, because that's what I read. I grew up reading books that had nothing to do with that. But when I got into high school, that's all we read, and I got mad. So, like, really?
Well, at least you had that. I grew up in the 70s and 80s, and in elementary school, my brother and I were the only chocolate drops in the entire school, other than a teacher. And then in junior high, it was me, my brother, and then there was, like, four or five more kids that came in that were Black in the student body of several thousand.
Wow. You
know? Yeah. So, and books, no, there wasn't no Black books. There wasn't, no, everything was Ernest Hemingway and
John Steinbeck.
And Judy Blume, who I love my Judy Blume now, but, you know, Judy Blume and all that, everything, all the books, everything was white. I did not see myself in anything.
I agree. And if you did see yourself, it was about how they was getting through slavery or how they were going through the Jim Crow era.
Yeah, because Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry, which is a series, which I didn't find out until later on that it was a series, like as in like a few years ago, I found out that it was a series, and she just released the last book in the series, I think this year or last year. But that was it. That was what I had. Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry, you know. Yep. And Autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman. That was it. Those are the things that stand out to me in my mind of where I saw myself. That's it.
Yeah, that's worse than what I had.
Yeah. And, you know, they talk about all these great writers, and I'm like, Ernest Hemingway and what is his name? The Great Gatsby.
Fitzgerald.
I was reading these books, and I was just like, and I had to reread them with my kids because I was homeschooling them, and this was part of the curriculum that way. And my youngest son said, "Why are these books classics?"
Classics for who? It ain't classic for me.
It ain't classic. Exactly. He was like, "Mom, The Great Gatsby, like the racism," he was like, "it's triggered me." He was like, "I cannot." I was like, "You know what? We gonna summarize this book. We're not even gonna read the whole thing."
Because books about racism all the time will trigger you. You know, like, man.
Exactly. But I'm still like, these books are not that great. Like,
I could
write that with my eyes closed,
and
still probably do a better job. But you know. They got the okay. They got the clearance. They had some friends somewhere that was like, "These are the books."
Yep.
Whatever.
That's exactly it. And ain't nobody pushing to change it either.
Nope. Nothing. Even though, like, when I was, because I grew up in a predominantly Jewish area, so the big book was The Diary of Anne Frank. How about Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl? Why was that not ever put into rotation? Because it was out way before The Diary of Anne Frank was.
Sure was.
And that was something that, even though, yes, it dealt with slavery, but I would have liked to just have seen myself in a book.
Absolutely.
And that book was, I'm still actually reading through it because I have to take breaks.
Me too. Like that book is heavy.
Yes.
That book is heavy.
Heavy. Like it makes what Anne Frank went through look like a cakewalk.
I know. Like, whoo.
Yeah.
That book is heavy.
Yeah. But you know, there was nothing like that. And these books were there. They were there. I ain't learned about Phyllis Wheatley when I was why did we not learn about her in literature?
I learned about her till college.
I only learned about her a few years ago. And I'm like a big Black history, you know, not even in my African American lit class in college in 1988. Nope.
Wow. See?
Taught by a Black professor now, too. Why have I not heard? Why was Phyllis Wheatley not included? See, this is what I'm talking about.
Yep. Okay. It's up to us. It's up to us to do it.
Yeah, but you need to pump your brakes a little bit.
Okay. I'm still in trouble.
You ain't getting out of trouble. When I see what happens in book two, maybe. But you're probably going to be in more trouble. But, you know, that's okay.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to be in more trouble, actually.
Oh. I don't even know what to do with you anymore. Take us through a typical writing day in Janae's sadistic world, please.
Oh yeah. So I lock myself in a room, whether it be my office or it could just be on a couch with the lights off. I, you know, turn on some music. The music depends on what type of chapter I'm writing. Like for the fighting scene with Drell and Martell, I was playing some, you know, Nuck If You Buck. You know. Yeah. It depends on the type of scene I'm writing. That'll determine
what
the music.
Did you have playing when you tried to drown him?
Thinking about that, what music did I play? I don't even remember for that one, for that particular chapter.
Probably something from Titanic, knowing you.
No, I was.
I'm just saying.
Not Celine Dion. No.
I'll never let go. That bitch, there was room on that raft boat, y'all. Move over.
Nah, I don't. You know what? I can't even remember the song I was playing for that one.
What was you playing for the dance scenes?
When
they were dancing together, like Janae, Janae, Jade, and Jarrell. What did you? All these J's.
I know. I was playing Brent. Do you know who Brent Faiyaz is or Sonder?
No.
Yes, like the new kind of like R&B with a 90s feel. That's who I was playing for that for those chapters.
What about the love scene?
The love scene, I was definitely playing Janet Jackson anytime, any place.
Oh,
yes. Yes, I was playing that one right there. That was yes.
All right. So keep going. How else do you, you get your
So I pick my music depending on the chapter I was writing. I'm writing, and then I just go. Like I don't stop. I just type. Like forget the errors. I don't go back. I just write the whole thing out. Sometimes I write two chapters at a time. Because I just get that invested in it. And for me, I just block everything out. Like I'm no longer myself. I'm the character. Like there are so many times that I've cried writing this book. Or like that I've gotten mad writing this book. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure you can feel it. Like when you read it, like, she was probably crying writing this. Like, the scene that you was talking about with,
I wasn't thinking nothing about you other than this bitch. I hate her. Why are you doing this? That's what I was thinking while I was crying. I wasn't thinking about your feelings. I was like, why is she doing this to me? Really?
Like, I don't know. But yeah, like I was like I put myself in Drell's shoes and I'm like bawling at the I can't believe I'm going through this, like it's me, but hey, that's how I write, that's what I do, and I hope that comes through, that emotion when people read it. So yeah,
I think that it comes through. You made people cry and throw iPads and throw Kindles and throw. When I get my signed copy, first thing I'm gonna do is just throw it across the room. Then I will pick it back up and read the inscription. Like, oh, and then I'm gonna throw it across the room again.
Yep. Like, I ain't fucking with her.
And I need a couple months before I even try to read that book again. Like, I need a few. I need some time.
Yes.
So you are self-published.
I am.
And you have been sharing on Instagram, but why don't you share with us some of your struggles in the process and why you chose to self-publish versus traditional publishing?
All right. So I'll answer the second question first. Okay. So I chose to self-publish rather than traditionally publish because I wanted to preserve my voice a lot of the reasons that we discussed about, you know, Black books.
Right.
When you are signed with a traditional publisher, they want you to write what's hot right now. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of similar with publishers as the music industry. You know, back in the 80s and 90s, they were only pushing out music or putting it on mainstream if you were talking about drugs, sex, you know, all type gang activity. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with traditional publishers. They want you to put out what's hot and what the topic is right now, which it's police brutality. And I'm not with that. I don't want to write that. So I want to push out what I want to push out, and that's just going to be that. So I decided to self-publish, one, for that reason, but two, to also support other Black businesses like editors and illustrators, because when you sign with a traditional publisher, you don't get those options. Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm like, I'm about to put my money in my community.
Right.
And so I assembled my team based on who I wanted to support, you know, and who I thought would be the right person for the job. So that's why I wanted to, you know, self-publish. Mm-hmm. Now, for the second question, some of the struggles, I think actually I'm mostly struggling for the post-publishing process. Mm-hmm. Like with marketing, oh my God, like marketing is like a whole different ball game. Like I was not ready. I was like, oh shit, I ain't putting no money aside for marketing. I don't even know no young adult bloggers who read Black YA because the market is saturated right now with YA fantasy. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh shit, I didn't even do what I was supposed to do there. Like everything honestly was really smooth. Like the distributing, we kind of went back and forth with Ingrid Spark about, because they actually accidentally published my ebook early. And I was like, no, it shouldn't be on the market. It should be up for pre-order.
You were like, yeah, you could pre-order. I'm like, wait a minute, what's she talking about pre-order? I already have the ebook.
Yes. So I was like, and I knew that. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to just tell you still this for pre-order. But they went on and published it. I was like, no, it's supposed to be on pre-order. So they had to go back. And so that was a struggle. And, but you know, the getting the editor and the editing, that was all smooth. It's just like the distributing and the post publishing process. That's a struggle for me. It's like, how do I get this thing in readers' hands, and how am I going to get these reviews? And, you know, yeah, that piece is.
Yeah. It's when you're self-publishing, you know, it's everything. Cause that's my biggest struggle right now is I'm finishing my third round of self-editing, and then I'm going to finally get it to an editor. But you know, I had to save up for that, and then I've got to save up to get it published, and I got to save up for the book designer, and I got to save up because I wanted to use Book Baby to distribute it. And you know, they have like you got to get it printed, and then they'll distribute it to Barnes and Noble and all that. But it takes money. It takes.
And I was fortunate enough to have like some savings, you know, that I was like, all right, I'm gonna just use this for my book and just get it off the ground and, you know, pray to God that my savings would be replenished, which it has, you know, so I can only thank God for that. Mm-hmm. That the money part, thankfully, was the easier part for me, but it's definitely a struggle for most self-publishers. Like, you really have to take time to save up because self-publishing is not cheap.
Yep, you got to wear all the hats. You got to do the marketing. You got to, all of it. It's all. Yep. So what is one thing that you hope readers take away from your debut novel?
I think the biggest thing, the biggest lesson to be learned is to really not to fall into peer pressure. That includes friends, that includes family, and also just to be mindful of how you're treating people, because you really don't know, like you honestly do not know what their life really looks like on a day-to-day basis. Like you have that one interaction with that person and that's only a snippet of time and you don't know what happened before or after. So just to really be careful, be mindful of how you're treating people and be mindful of peer pressure and, you know, the reasons why people want you to do things. Like you need to have your own voice and your own sound mind to make the decisions that's best for you. So,
okay. And then give our aspiring authors out there one piece of advice you wish you knew.
One piece of advice I wish I knew was to not, oh, before I started, to not care about what people think about my writing.
Yeah, obvious you didn't care about what anybody was doing.
Woo! You know, I knew you was gonna say something slick.
I know I was. I'm gonna get it in every chance. Every chance I can get.
Yep, yep. See? But yeah, that is true though. Like really not to like tell the story that you wanna tell. And like for me it was like, oh, like cause I'm a teacher, like what the white people gonna think if they pick up my book? Like, you know, I was thinking about that and now I'm like, I don't care about them. Like it took a while to get to that point though, you know, and
you need to follow Toni Morrison's voice advice. She's like, I don't need the white gaze to validate.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly how I wrote the book and that's exactly how I'm distributing it. So
with a whole lot of emotional angst for everybody.
I'ma just set y'all right up, set y'all up for the emotional roller coaster of your life.
Just standing behind us in the pool and we waiting like, oh, sticking a toe in, like it's cold and you just come up behind, push him in, ha! Swim. That's what you did. You awful, Janae. You awful.
I'm sorry.
No, you ain't. No,
I'm not.
See? That's what I'm talking about. So when can we expect the next book in the series to be released?
I am hoping late fall, early winter. I got a couple of my beta readers reading it right now. So I'm at a 50-50 split where like, yes, like I love where this went. And the others are like, I don't know. So I'm going to reevaluate my manuscript and see where I can like change things because I'm getting a lot of feedback, which I love, some good and some bad. So I got to take some time to sit on that and really, really think about the major plot events and go from there. So I would say that the earliest, late fall, at the very latest, spring, but I don't want it to be that late. So
why come I'm not a beta reader?
You can be.
I'm just saying.
But like here's the thing is that like if it doesn't actually end up being what's in the manuscript right now, then you're gonna be like, ah, but you can see what I was originally thinking.
This works for me. I'm just saying. Because I need some continuation of the story.
We can arrange that, ma'am. We can do that.
So where can readers find you on social media?
Yes, you can follow me on Instagram at Books by Janae, Facebook at Books by Janae, and then my YouTube channel, which is basically all of my IGTV videos at Books by Janae. So, and then my website, of course, www.booksbyjanae.com.
Look at that. Nice and simple across the board. Same yep. name. There you go. That's what I'm talking about. So thank you so much for traumatizing us.
It was fun. I was cast up. My cheeks are hurting from laughing so much. My stomach muscles hurt. All my tears in my eyes dried out.
Well, we appreciate you coming on and sharing your time and talents with us today. Truly enjoyed having you on the show and putting you in the hot seat.
Yes, thank you. I enjoyed the hot seat. I ain't gonna lie. It was fun.
Yeah. You are an amazing woman, and I have no doubt that your debut novel is going to take the world by storm, and I'm going to do everything I can to keep it up on Goodreads, because I need to see you win the debut novel award.
Oh, thank you. Woo-woo. Yes. I'm trying my hardest to get it out there myself, too, so.
Yes.
I hope I'm not being annoying.
Oh, no. We gonna work on that. I'm going to make this my personal mission.
Aww.
I am. Yes, ma'am. And Booze and Bros, I'm going to leave you with a quote from the incomparable Sonia Sanchez. So much of growing up is an unbearable weight, a constant longing for another time, another season. Until next time, grab a book and read, and I'm out. You've been listening to Between the Reads. I'm your host, Audra Russell. Join us next time for another great episode.